Welcome to Dice in Mind, a podcast hosted by Brad Brown and Jason Kaufman to explore the intersection of life, games, science, music, philosophy, and creativity through interviews with leading creatives. All are welcome in this space.
So we're going to continue with the second episode in our two-parter with Al Spader and Jim Johnson. Ironically, as this releases, if I remember correctly, we are coming up on April 11th, which is the anniversary. This will be the three-year anniversary of the launch of episode one, right?
Well done, sir. We are episode 119. We're just out ahead of it by a few days.
Yeah.
3 years is this, or just shy of 3 years as this drops. That is surreal.
That is so cool. And there are a couple folks that we could have on for a 3 year anniversary episode. But I mean, how cool is it that we have Jim and Al that as we pass the 11th, that's our current episode. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So two-parter, second part coming up, more on the tactical campaign. And all things Trek, and we'll talk a bit about Jason's cosplay plans afterwards.
No, we won't. Al Spader is a middle school science teacher, father of five-year-old twin boys, and a freelance RPG writer and game designer. As a regular writer for Star Trek Adventures and lead designer of the Sentience 2D20 RPG, Al brings his knowledge of neurodivergence and social-emotional learning to the TTRPG community. Jim Johnson was born about the same time Apollo 12 landed on the moon and has always been kind of spacey, and shares a birthday with the Kindle. He is the author of the Pistols and Pyramids Weird Western series and the Potomac Shadows Urban Fantasy series. He's also written a bunch of other stuff in and around science fiction and fantasy genres and pen and paper RPGs. He's currently the project manager and line editor for Modiphius' Star Trek Adventures RPG.
We'll jump back in. Thanks for sticking around with us, folks. I have a question, like I mentioned at the end, but Jim, you said you actually have a question as well.
Yeah, definitely. So, of course, you know, Jason, Brad, thanks for having us on the show again. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I'm always excited to come back and talk to you because I love the vibe that you create. And I love that you're completely bought into the idea of RPGs as literature. I think that's a piece of the RPG industry that not enough people are championing or hitting the bell on. Because like these are, I mean, not just Modiphius' books, but like so many RPG books out there now are just really cool artifacts unto themselves that are worth reading from page, you know, the beginning to the end. And I just really appreciate that your show has been moving on toward that even more and using that as a focus. So I just really appreciate that.
Thanks,
and thanks for having us on the show as always.
Thank you.
So, you know, hey fans, if you haven't listened to the first part of this, go listen to that. Cause we're picking up right where we left
context.
Off. And so like some of these questions and comments, you're not going to get until you go watch that first. Listen, this is a podcast, not a video. Al Spader, who's with us here, Al, I've got a question for you. You were the lead writer on the Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign book, of course, and you have gone on to develop your own games. You've created Sentience for the 2D20 World Builder System, which is an awesome game. I had a lot of fun doing the playtest on that. You are now finalizing the book on your new game called Once Upon that you're developing as well. What I'm curious, my question for you is your experience being the lead writer on the Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign.
Yes.
How did that, or how did it not, inform all the work you did on Sentience and then Once Upon? Like, what did you learn from working on Federation Klingon War books on into your own projects, if at all?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So the Sentience core rulebook was all about organization, right? How can I present the content in the clearest way possible? So, you know, I wanted to, having the experience of laying out the chapters for the tactical campaign certainly helped with that, right? Because it had me think, what do the players need to see first? Then what can they do to build upon that? So that helped a lot. When I moved on to my Tales from the Awakening book, I had three other writers writing adventures for Sentience. So we did something very similar in that the four of us got together in a group, and you know, group chat, and hey, what's your story going to be? What's your story going to be? And even more interesting, by the way, is the fact that each of those writers had never published anything before. So that was really, really fun. They were varying degrees of confidence among them, but I put my faith in them, like we always put our faith into our writers. And then had to smooth some things around the edges when I got the manuscripts in. And then I put them in order. And basically, it was whoever turned the manuscript in first, you got to be the first adventure in the book. Cool. And so on and so forth. So that was definitely, you know, communicating as a team certainly has helped quite a bit with that Tales from the Awakening book, for sure.
I just love the idea of you using that collaborative approach, and it's moving into other products. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Jim, I talked over you there.
No, not at all. And I know you've got a question on the burner ready to go.
Well, I think your question really couldn't have been a better lead-off question, because as someone who is, and you both you and I do tech PM work in the past, and that's kind of in our professional DNA. Al, it just sounds to me like you were in effect kind of a project manager to Jim being almost a program manager for all of these. Jim, if you don't mind, I'm curious now, how does project managing differ for you when you have like Al working on this, and you have like Michael leading on Captain's Log and things like that? You know, obviously you're in constant communication, but is it different working with, and I don't mean because of personalities, I just mean like, because the products are a little different, do you have to tailor how you manage these based off of like the product, whether it's Utopia Planitia, whether it's Lower Decks, whether it's this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you highlighted it a little bit, Brad, when you were just kind of like coming up with the definitions, where for the longest time I was the project manager of STA, right? So I was intimately involved with every single product from beginning, you know, from concept to distribution and publication. And like all those books I worked on, I don't know them so well anymore, because once you finish a project, you get distance from it, and then you start to forget the bad stuff. You only remember the good stuff. That's true for anything, right?
Yeah.
But I think the Captain's Log book and the Federation Klingon War book were the first two books that I worked on with STA. Were again, like I talked about in the last episode, I knew I had to take a step back because I had to focus on the other two books that we're working on, because I just didn't have enough bandwidth to do everything anymore. And so there was a little bit of soul searching on my part of like, I have to let this go, right? I have to let these projects go. And not so much I'm never going to see them again. Right. It's just like that day-to-day hardcore focus that I usually have on the books, I just didn't have the bandwidth to do it, right? So I knew I had to step back and focus on Utopia and Lower Decks. And I had to kind of turn over the reins to some extent to Michael and to Al to do their, so they could go do their great work on their respective books. And so, you know, then I kind of became a program manager, right? It wasn't just working on the projects. I'm now the program manager on these two books, because they're, you know, because Al was effectively the project manager. Effectively, yeah. I mean, basically, you didn't have to deal with all the paperwork and all the red tape that I had to deal with, but that's not...
That wasn't the word you were about to use.
Yeah, nice try.
Nice try.
I already called Jason a jackass in the first episode.
We can flag this back.
So we can flag it. Say
all the necessary stuff that goes into a project. Al didn't have to... I was able to keep Al mostly creative, right? He could do the outlines. He could do the writing. He could go create and make the stuff that I knew he would be able to make really, really well. I did the same thing with Michael. Michael was able to focus on the creative side of things with Captain's Log, do the outline, work with Allison and some of the other writers on actually hammering out how it was going to work. And then they went on and delivered the manuscripts, which is awesome, because that was exactly what I needed. I was able to be the project manager on Lower Decks and Utopia to get those two over the plate. And then I was able to come back to these two and say, okay, here's your manuscript for Captain's Log. I can now take this and massage it, and we can get it out to the product. And then the same thing with the tactical campaign book. As part of your question, though, Brad, is like, I knew once I got the manuscripts from them, I had a real strong moment of sadness, right? Because I saw how good the manuscripts were, and I was like, these are such good books, and I know I didn't have a big hand in creating them, right? Like the actual sausage making, putting them together. I knew that I was responsible for putting the talent together, right? Because obviously that's part of the job, is like hiring the right people to do the job. And hoping that you got hoping you got it right, hoping you got the right mix of people at the right time with the right resources they needed. And so I was fortunate that Al and Michael were both able to rise to the challenges that I gave them and delivered great products. And this is something that we've talked about before, guys. I know we did, is trusting the team that you create, right? As a leader and as a project manager, you build this team and you hope they do what you want them to do. But you got to let them go do it. You can't micromanage them. You can't tell them what you want to do. You just got to say, here's the parameters of what I want you to make. Go make it. Touch base with me if you need something, because that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you, but I'm not going to tell you how to do it. And I don't think, Al, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I was looking over your shoulder every day saying, oh, where's this thing? And where's this thing? And how's this thing going? You know, I just kind of let him go and said, you know, give me a touch base in a couple of weeks and let's see how it goes. Or see how things are going. And he gave me so much confidence. I mean, both him and Michael gave me so much confidence in what they were doing that I knew I didn't have to lean on him. I didn't have to look after him. I could go focus on the other books that I was working on. And I think that just harkens to the leadership stuff that you wrote about in your book, Jason, of being a good leader, just letting your people do their thing.
Yeah.
Trust the process, trust them. Yeah. And, you know, from a project management standpoint, if you built your schedule correctly, even if they totally F it up, you still got time to fix it. Right.
Yep.
And fortunately that didn't happen. Right. Fortunately that didn't happen in either case. It was just refining at that point. We were turning the dials and putting the lenses on and making it a little more focused, but both of them delivered the 95% solution when they needed to deliver. And I was like, well, that just made my life easier because now I can take it the last 5% of the way and then get it ready for layout. And I mean, first it went to approvals and then it went to layout. And, it's a testament to them and their teams. And I guess ultimately my team, but I'm going to deflect and give the credit to them that the licensor had almost no comments on either Captain's Log or the Federation Klingon War Book. Right. And when the licensor has no comments, that makes it easy for me. Cause then instead of having to wait to make changes and revisions and stuff, we just go, okay, it's approved, done. We can go straight to layout. And it just cuts time off my schedule. And Brad, you know how important schedule is for a project manager, right? If you can save time, that's a win, right? Mm-hmm. If you can get stuff in under budget and on time, or even early, I mean, not too early, because if you get stuff too early, then it screws up your schedule. But if you get it in a little bit early and under budget, then you're in great shape. And that's what we ended up doing here. So I hope that answers your question, Brad.
No, it does.
I rambled that's off of it.
No, and Al, I mean, we talked about it in the prior episode too. Not only were you working on this, but you have other projects that you're working on your own.
Yeah.
You know, how did you manage? How did you juggle that?
Well, because you also have a job and a family.
Yeah, both of you. Yeah, I mean.
As the boys are becoming older, I thought it would become easier to find time to write. And it's, but before I answer that question, I do want to go back to one thing that Jim was just talking about. And that was, and Jason, again, I'm sure that, you talk about this quite a bit, is that a good leader makes their team better, right? They find what they're good at and they enhance that. So throughout the whole process, Jim was giving Michael and myself kind of a peek behind the curtain. So like he brought us into, the Monday project management to show us how it all lined up.
Oh, that's cool.
He had us keep track of our word counts for each of our writers, and so like in any question that we had about production or art or layout, Jim was very happy to kind of like show us, how the sausages were made, so to speak. Right. That was an amazing experience just in its own right. On top of being able to work with an amazing group on putting a book together.
Yeah. I want to add that, this is tying into being a leader, being a manager, hiring the right people, because fortunately both Al and I, you know what, I need to put this, I'm pointing with my pen. Like, you guys don't see the video, but I'm pointing with my pen. I shouldn't do that, so I apologize. Both Al and Michael are creatives, of course, but they're both really curious, right? And they both had a lot of questions about, because they wanted to know more about the sausage making, right? Like Al especially, and I knew Al was developing Sentience and he was developing these other games. And so he's got that production mentality of like, okay, well, what happens next? Once you're done with the manuscript, what do you do? Like, how does it go from manuscript to layout to a book? And so I was able to kind of like give him some insight into that and to give him some sense of like how Modiphius is probably not that different from a lot of other companies. Cause like, I mean, basically it's the same process. You got to make a manuscript and you got to get the art and you got to lay it out. And then it has to go to a printer somewhere, whether the printer is in America or UK or Lithuania, or, I mean, wherever your printer is, they're still doing the same basic process to make a book. Right. And so I was happy to share that knowledge because I knew, not so much Michael, but especially Al, I knew he was developing his own games and wanted to go develop games like Sentience. And like this process that we were going through with these books was absolutely going to inform everything that he was doing and hopefully give him more insight so that he could be even better and more efficient once he started publishing his own stuff. Although I guess, Al, I guess a follow-on question for you would be, and I know this is going to be hard to answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. How would your development of Sentience been different if you hadn't worked on the Federation Klingon War book? Like, if you can think about all the stuff you learned doing that book, either learning from me or just by learning by doing, if you didn't have that chunk of knowledge, how would have you gone about doing, would you have even been able to do Sentience?
I mean, it would have probably just been a Word document. And actually the first edition of Sentience was just a Word document, with a bunch of, free art that I found. I think the idea of, organizing your stuff visually so that the readers can see where it is and make out, what it is that they're looking at, that helped a lot, especially when we moved into the revised edition, in the Yellow Hand, when we have a sidebar on every single page where we could pull out tables that are easy for people to see. So that helped a lot there for sure. Considering cost of a cover versus using a free digital cover, like we had no budget to start with when I started Sentience, how can we maximize both the content and using free or clip art or whatever we could find in order to accentuate that. And that all came from, my experience with Klingon War.
So let's really get into the authorial weeds here. We've done this with Jim before. Al, when you're, let's really talk workflow, because we both geek out on this, Brad and I do.
Oh, yeah.
When you're writing, and I don't know if your answer will be different depending on what you're writing, but when you're writing, where do you write? What do you write in? Are you in Word? Are you in something else? What's your, what works for you?
Well, having worked for Star Trek Adventures for so long, we use Microsoft Word. So that's what I was, was using or like in my brain, what I should be using when I'm writing.
Right.
And then I met my layout guy, Jay Sedalius from the Yellow Hand. And he's like, I do all of my layout using Google Slides. So you should just use Google Docs to write your stuff.
Right.
So that's the path I started going with my personal stuff is Google Docs. But that's just because my layout guy can use, Google Slides to create these beautiful.
That is so cool.
Yeah. I still don't know how he does it, but like it's spectacular.
All of that in Google
stuff
Slides
that he puts together.
It just reminds me of George R. R. Martin always, I think he said a while back in an interview when he's doing Game of Thrones books, he does it on an old disconnected, no internet PC running like an early version of WordStar because all the names and everything would constantly cause spelling issues. So this is the kind of stuff when I hear you say you had to switch over from one to the other, and slides instead of like InDesign, yes. You know, which we all know is extraordinarily expensive for layout and everything.
Wait, Jim, cool. What do you have there? You look excited about something.
First of all, I'm trying to get my cat away from the microphone.
Oh, that's fine.
because she's hungry and
well, that's understandable.
She hears me talking, but I know we've talked about this before. But mm-hmm. just listening to you talking about the different tools that you used mm-hmm. and how George Martin uses an old disconnected computer with a WordStar. Is that what you
yeah.
said?
Yeah, WordStar. Yeah.
So this. Is my Alpha Spartan Neo.
That's it. We've talked about
have it.
That with you.
You didn't have it last time. So
like, I don't know. This thing's like, what, 20 years old now or something? God. I write all of my first drafts on this still, even to this day. Every novel, every short story, every outline I write for Star Trek Adventures, everything starts off on that Alpha Spartan Neo. And those of you who aren't familiar, and this is a Neo 1. This isn't the Neo 2 that came out, you know, later. But you educators were probably familiar with the Neo because yeah. these were so cool when they came out, like a whole class could have these and the teacher was able to connect them all. And so that you could download all the files onto a master computer. Okay,
because this is a podcast, so none of you listening can see Jim's Alpha Neo. So
Google it. You'll
exactly.
find
it. If you're not familiar at all, and if you're not at least as old as all of us are, there's no way you could even relate to this. Google this. Pause. Google it when you're done laughing and just ogling. Come back because that's a feat.
Yeah.
When I worked in a school district as a tech director, I thought those were the coolest things because they were easy to manage.
Yeah.
At a classroom level, rather than a cart full of laptops. This was pre-Chromebook.
Our good friend Scott, who I will forever be indebted to because he introduced me in high school to RPGs and he introduced me to West End Games Star Wars, and my life is immeasurably better before it. Even if nothing else had come after that, it still would have been immeasurably better. But I remember visiting him. Must have been our senior year of high school. He and his family had moved out of town, so I was visiting him for a weekend, and his parents had just got him a Smith Corona word processor. And it was just the coolest thing I had ever seen. We just stayed up one night typing because it was so cool.
That's a height of nerdiness right there. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure we were creating homebrew character sheets, but still.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
The Neo is awesome.
Yeah, the Neo, I think I got that in 2002, 2003, somewhere around there. And that was right when I decided, because like I think every writer has to get to this point at some point, where I decided, you know what, I'm really going to try to be a writer. I'm going to start letting go of some of the videos I used to watch a lot, like the movies I watched, the TV shows I watched, a lot of video games. I just made that mental shift finally to say, you know what, if I want to write and I want to be a writer, I need to put the time in, right? I need to be intentional about putting the time in. And what I knew I needed to do is I needed to disconnect from the computer because the internet is a huge time sink. Because like I can check email, I can check websites, I can check this, I can play games, blah, 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 blah. There's all just a million possible distractions on the computer, right? So I knew, and this was partly because I had been taking online classes with Dean Wesley Smith and Chris Rush, because they're two great writers and two great teachers. And they were constantly hammering us to say, we have a business computer where we do all of our business stuff, but then we have a writing computer. And it's in a separate room. It's not connected to the internet. It's just for writing. And I was like, okay, I need something like that. But I also needed to be portable and cheap because I didn't want to get a laptop. I needed something cheap and portable. And the Alpha Spartan Neo was exactly what I needed, you know, 20 years ago, because it's a full-size keyboard and it's got a little tiny screen on it. And the screen can only display like three lines at a time. So that means you can't edit.
Yeah,
like if you're on a computer in like Word, like you got a Word document, you can edit and cut and paste and move stuff around all day long, but you're not necessarily writing new content, right? You're massaging it and editing it. But the Neo, like all it has on it is a word processor and a calculator. And that's pretty calculator is pretty boring. So it's just a pure first draft word machine, right? It's basically an electronic typewriter. My productivity when I started using it, my productivity went through the roof. Like I was, instead of writing, you know, a couple hundred words a day, you know, chipping and chopping at it, at a story. I was, you know, I'd sit down for an hour, and that's also about the same time I started using the Pomodoro technique of writing in sprints.
You've talked about that, yeah.
So, you know, 25, you know, set a timer for 30 minutes, just write, you know, and that's why I use an outline, because if I'm just writing into the dark, I waste a lot of time staring at the wall, like, what am I going to write about? I don't know what I'm doing. But if I have an outline, then I know exactly where I'm going. It's like having a GPS for your story. It's like, I know where the beats are. I know where I got to turn and move. And so I was writing, you know, 1400 words in half an hour.
Oh my God.
So I could knock out a short story in a couple of, you know, in a day, and a novel. I mean, I think when I was writing my first couple of novels, I got those done in like 20 days or something, because I had the outline, I had the focus, I was doing the sprints. If I could fit in 3 or 4 half hour sprints a day, you know, that's 2 hours of work. That's not a huge amount of time commitment. And plus, I've been giving up on video games and other stuff, so I was focusing on the writing. And it's all because of the Neo. That was the tool I needed at the time. I'll stop. I promise. I got one more thing.
No, yeah, go.
I've discovered, being on Facebook, like, you get all the stupid Facebook ads that come up all the time. There are a whole bunch of new writing tools out there that I'm confident the genesis was the Neo, but I think there's one called the Free Write, and there's one called Hemingway or something. And it's basically an electronic typewriter, but you can connect to the internet. You can download the stuff to the internet. And they're like the big, heavy mechanical keyboards. Like some people are really into the mechanical keyboards that make the big clinky clanky sounds, right? Where I'm perfectly fine with the touch type stuff. But I look at that stuff and they're like, you know, $600-$700. I'm like, I've still got my Neo and it does everything I needed to do. Why would I buy this thing?
I sent you a link to this. And
did you?
Yeah. And it talks about distraction-free 7 of them. The first one is a typewriter.
Yeah.
The second one is an Alpha Smart.
There you go.
The third one is that Free Write. That's $500 to $1,000.
Yeah.
Okay. So hold on. So going even more meta then. So this is so much fun. So for those of you listening, still, we promise this is all related to RPGs. I mean, we're coming back. We promise. But so I have found, I never would have expected this or believed it. I do most of my writing, which is so much less than, and so much, I mean, totally different than what you guys are doing, right? It's what I do. I write every morning, but what I do, like, requires almost no creativity, and it's just a different thing. But I write almost exclusively now in Google Docs, and I do it on my MacBook, but I've got a workflow where I just, so like I've never had notifications on a computer. Like, I've always shut that stuff off because it's too distracting. But like, when I'm writing, I just, you know, it's in a browser, obviously, because it's Google Docs, but that's all that's going to be open. Mm-hmm. Other stuff isn't up in the background. I can hop over if I need to do some quick research, right? But like, I can just, and then the darndest thing, we just got my older daughter a brand new MacBook Air. The thing is just screaming fast because she's about to go to college, or will, in a, you know, this fall. And she set it up for dark mode, dark view.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh, and so I've never done that. I started changing that around on my Mac, where I've got the dark mode, but then, you know, you can still make sure you have like the white background for your pages. And it, I mean, this sounds really sophomoric, but like, it's so much better for writing, I found, right? Because it's helping to just, right? It's all just workflow, whatever it works. I never thought I would fall in love with Google Docs, Al. But
yeah, I do it like crazy, man. And like, I have, because I have it on my phone as well, I have probably a dozen folders in my Google Drive that are all different writing concept ideas, some RPGs, some like, you know, stories, some novels, like that, like, because my ADHD brain, like, once something pops in, like, if I don't get it written down immediately, I'm going to forget that idea, you know, so I've got like folders. I'm like, ooh, here's something for this idea that I have. I log it in there, and then I, in those same folders, is where I do my writing practice, essentially.
Wow.
I was going to, just before we switch gears, I got Books is a company, actually. I can't remember the name of it. I think it's Onyx. Books are e-ink Android tablets. And I picked up one because I had some gift certificates that I needed to use. And I use that because I'm doing some writing for some other topics that we've talked about before, Jason knows. And I've been using that. And when I traveled, I used that with a little Bluetooth keyboard, and it was distraction free because it made it easier. Now, did I need that? Could I go your path, Jason? Yeah. Or can I, if I could find myself an Alpha Smart, I would be, I would be giddy. but
eBay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They even said Amazon will sometimes pop them up as renewed for like 70, 80 bucks,
right.
Which is better than, you know, 10 times that amount for some of these new ones that come out. But yeah, just the workflows you all do to write, Jason, Al, Jim, all of you do as writers. I just find it fascinating just because from a creativity standpoint, I haven't ever gone down that path. Mm-hmm. So, and the operational stuff is just cool to me.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I had to mute a minute ago. My son was out. I don't know if you guys have Portillo's anywhere, but he had to bring me mint cake shake. So enough sugar in here. Give me about 10 minutes and I'll be flying.
Portillo's, is that the Chicago chain of what do they call the sandwiches? The
the hot dogs and
the meat, it's not Italian meat, it's what do they call it? It is like
I know what you're talking about. It's like the beef, the hot beef sandwiches.
They do
phenomenal.
I think they call Chicago. It heartburn.
Oh, they definitely do. Okay. But their Chicago hot dogs are phenomenal. And can you see how on our podcast we went from Google Docs to hot dogs?
You know, we've gone from the making of the sausage to literally the making of the sausage. Right. That's that's good night, hit everybody. Bottom.
Good night. Yeah, yeah. Mic drop.
Yeah, I think I mean not to continue on the sausage making and the tools and stuff. I really like Google Docs as a collaborative tool. Like if we're collaborating on an outline,
that's
or we're throwing ideas against the wall and we want to kind of like start shaping it into something, I love it for that. What I really hate though is when you have a Word document with styles built into it, and then you move that Word document into Google Docs. Google Docs screws up the styles. And then it's impossible to take that out of Google and then go to a designer and say, hey, I'll put this in InDesign.
You can go from Google to Word pretty well. Yeah. Google doesn't, going into Google with a document just isn't, I got into Google Docs because of, collaboration, right? Like almost everything these days, almost everything I'm working on, it's with one or more people. And it really, Google Docs works. But yeah, I still export to Word because I just can't help myself. But yeah, trying to put, because my ecosystem is Apple, Google Docs, or Google Drive, but then Dropbox. I really love Dropbox because it's so seamless. But yeah, putting stuff into Google, it's a world of pain.
Yeah, Dropbox is amazing. A couple of years ago, I needed to get a laptop because I was doing some traveling, and I just workflow wise, I needed a laptop. Mm-hmm. And I bought an inexpensive Mac Air book, I think. It was one of the inexpensive ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never worked, like Dropbox was always on my desktop, and I never had another computer that it was connected to, right?
Yeah.
And so I got that laptop and I put Dropbox on it. And I was like, oh, this is so awesome, because now I can be on my desktop working on stuff. It automatically saves the Dropbox. And then I'm on the laptop in a hotel or something. It's like, oh, it's all there. I don't have to email myself the files. I don't have to use a thumb drive. I don't have to use all that weird stuff. It's just like, it's all right there on the cloud.
I've got it on my phone. If I see stuff, I can download it straight into one of my folders, and boom, it's waiting for me everywhere.
Yeah,
since we're talking about that, I use OneDrive just because, and Google Drive. Jason and I do all our
everything
file backups
in Google.
Google Drive. Yeah. But with OneDrive, I can actually it'll save to the cloud unless I designate to download. So I have a folder. Jason knows I have an RPG folder. I have a folder specifically for STA. I download that onto my iPhone 13 mini because it's got a lot of storage on it. So even when I was away from, you know, it's not the same as reading on a tablet. It's definitely not the same as a book.
It's print, yeah.
I can load up and run and access any of the books because Modiphius sends you the PDF when you order the book.
Right.
Have them all out there. And it's just so nice to have the ability, whether you use Dropbox, OneDrive, whatever else, boxes out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the way data moves and the ability for you all to collaborate on these books, like you've done with the tactical, and you know, Al's up in Maine, Jim's in Virginia, Michael's out on the West Coast. I know. Mm-hmm. Just think about how you're able to collaborate and do this across. I mean, Michael's almost as far from Al as you could possibly be, from Maine down to California.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So
and then it, you know, and then expand it out, right? My art director is in Mexico City. One of my graphic designers is in Ecuador. Most of the Modiphius team is in the United Kingdom.
Right.
We have a couple people in the Netherlands. So like you're talking.
That's incredible.
12 time zones, 13 time zones. I mean, it's a lot.
back to some hard hitting questions.
Sure.
Al, what kind of a boss is Jim? No.
More
seriously. Finally, embarrassed Jim.
I should more sign off now.
More seriously, and it's okay if you don't want to answer this, but every project, and we talk about this with you, Jim, every project, every book, anything, there's always, I mean, obviously there's a point at which it's like, whether it's being imposed internally or externally, it just has to be done, right? You can't go forever. I'm curious, is there anything, like in the tactical guide, I mean, it's so different, it's so novel. Is there anything, and this is for either of you, I suppose, but like any pieces, like if you just had a little more time, like anything you wish you could, like in hindsight, you wish you could have stuck in there. I mean, I'm thinking kind of granular stuff, I guess, but you know, like I would have loved to do this, but it didn't fit the vibe, or it didn't fit the timeline, or I mean, or no one else would ever want to play it. You know, I mean, there's a reality.
A couple of things. I would have liked to have gotten some more NPCs and adversaries in there.
Sure.
Because we very consciously brought characters from like the motion picture era and reimagined them as their younger selves. That's during so the Klingon cool. War, because they would have been there. And we didn't quite get all of them into the book. Mm. I would have loved to have had a more detailed section on the optional rules of using reactions.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like being able to react when it's not your turn. There's only like two or three things that you can do in there. And I probably could have done a full page of that system and things you could do in Trek with it. I think that's really about it though. You know, obviously it would have been nice to have had like a fold out map or like the cards, you know, obviously. But like we realized early on that was just not going to be feasible.
The maps must be very expensive. No, I mean, I would think so.
It depends on what kind of maps you're talking about.
Oh, I was just thinking like what you were saying, Al, like the foldouts.
Yeah, the paper maps that, you know, you attach in the back and they're perforated, you pull them out. And then, you know,
if you're doing it in the quantities that we do it in, it's not that expensive. Because we're an RPG company, our margins are pretty tight, right?
Pretty tight,
and so even adding a bookmark adds a little bit to each copy, right? And then adding a fold out map plus the glue that has to, you know, you can't just put the map in. You gotta secure it somehow. So you use that I don't even know what it's called. It's like that, it's like tacky glue. It doesn't like ruin the book, but it just peels off when you
the whatever it's called. Stuff.
But that's another cost, right? And so you keep adding these costs and costs and costs. It's like, okay, we got to cut somewhere to keep it, you know, cost effective. The maps are not necessarily that expensive to make, but it's just another cost that you have to think about.
Yeah, that's fair.
Along with everything else that you're doing.
I did because the original, now this is just for the standard quadrant map that came with the original rule book.
Mm-hmm.
I took screenshots as best I could so that I could print and retape it. So like Jason and I do. I can actually write and draw, like, especially like with the Shackleton Expanse book. Oh, I
see where you're going. Okay.
You know, I mean, it just, it brings it more to life. But this is important when you were talking earlier about the miniatures idea. The book is creative enough that you can go any direction you want, whether it's miniatures or on paper or with Jason's fantastic drawing abilities. You know, yeah, you're shaking your head. No,
yeah, no.
That's absolutely true. Just the ability to do that. That's what I like about the creativity of something like this. Because if I'm traveling or if one of us is traveling, we can play.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Which is cool. In fact, Michael Dismuke, he talked about that a few weeks ago. He said that when this book went on pre-order, he was going on a trip. I don't know if it was a business trip or a personal trip, but he was on the airplane and he got the PDF and he was actually playing through the tactical campaign while he was on the plane, you know, and just jotting down notes as he was going.
I think he was
even rolling dice right there on the plane. He was, which is awesome. I love the idea of him rolling dice on the little fold out table or whatever. Right. So I just love to hear that creativity in it. And I think this is just on the tangent of creativity. One of the things we didn't talk about in the last episode is how flexible this tactical campaign is.
Yeah.
The way it's structured, and I didn't appreciate the structure really until we actually got to layout. I think it just didn't look in a manuscript in Word looks very different once you turn it into a layout. And I think when I was reading the manuscript in Word, I was like, I get like 90% of this, but like 10% of it's just not connecting for me for some reason. And I know I probably pissed off Al a number of times asking so many questions and asking the same question over and over again in different ways, trying to get the answer I needed, even though it was just me as a visual learner. I was like, okay, I need to see this in a different format until I actually get it. The whole tactical campaign, there's exactly two tables in it that you would change to make it applicable to any other war, right? You change the character asset table, you change the ship asset table. You could use the tactical campaign as written in the Romulan War, the Klingon War, the Dominion War, the Temporal Cold War, like the Cardassian Border Wars, any war you can think of that's in canon or that you create what's the war? Axanar, right? The whole Axanar battle thing.
You could do
literally anything in the franchise just by changing those two tables. Come up with 20 new characters, come up with 20 new ships, and either make them connected to that time period that you're doing it in, or just, you know, make stuff up. You can use the entire rest of the tactical campaign as written, no changes necessary. And that flexibility, I think fans are just starting to get a sense of like what that is. And I can't wait. Once this book comes out, I can't wait to see what fans actually do with it. Like, what are you going to make up? I think somebody online said, oh, well, I'm going to use it with the Shackleton campaign book and do like this whole war with the Vinshari coming in with their ships coming after this station. And you can make Narendra Station one of your assets, right? You could, you know, and the Thunder Child and the Bellerophon and everything else. It's like, oh, yeah, you could do all kinds of stuff with this.
We put the rules in there as to how to make assets as well.
Yeah.
So all you need to do is look at, an NPC profile or ship profile, and you have how to build an asset right there for you. So it wouldn't take long to make a table of 20 cool characters or 20 cool ships.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
I'm not one to put, I like to keep, Jason knows this, I'm a little OCD about books. I like to make sure that the binding is good, but I could foresee myself shoving other papers in there to the different eras and having the assets all there within that. Because I mean, you could have stopped Jim at Dominion War. That would have been fine for me. I've been dying to do something like that, but Jason and I have tried to avoid changing canon.
Yeah, you stay away from. Well, that's the beauty of like the Shackleton Expanse, right? I mean, that you've got such a massive sandbox that has so much detail. I would pay good. Actually, I guess I'm not being euphemistic. I would literally pay good money. Will someone just please tell me what happened to the Cardassian Union? I'm sorry, writers in Star Trek, but like to me, that is one of the and I've said this before, but one of the biggest lacunae in canon, and I get it, they've gone all these other directions and it's great, but like that was such a big deal. I always think back, well, like, see, like, we could do this now if we want to at the Tactical Campaign Manual, because the episodes where I'm blocking on the characters' names, but where, you know, the who he wasn't the gull, but the one below the gull. Yeah, Damar, thank you. Like, turns because, wait a minute, you just nuked 2 billion of our own people, right? And like that episode, I can't think of the name, but it's like such amazing storytelling, mm-hmm. you know, certainly for the time. And so like now we actually, as I'm saying this out loud, like we could actually play that out right. if we really wanted to. The other thing
Wait, before you go, Jason, you just brought something up.
Go for it.
I can't believe we haven't asked Al this. Maybe we did in the last episode and I don't remember. Favorite series, favorite character in the Star Trek universe.
Oh, so we're just ripping off Jim and Michael then. And
yeah. I mean,
this is pretty much.
But we've asked Jim. We are.
No, you're totally ripping them off. But you know.
Yeah, sorry, man. But yeah. that's why it's continuing yeah. the conversation.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
There you go.
I mean, Deep Space Nine is my favorite series as a whole. I think Strange New Worlds might get there someday if they really execute it well. I did just finish Enterprise season 4, and let me tell you, I was more than impressed.
Really?
With specifically season 4 of Enterprise. I really, really enjoyed it a lot.
Interesting.
And my favorite character is Mr. Saru.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing a chapter on Saru right now.
Awesome.
It's not going well at all, but I love the character.
That's good because his command didn't go well at all.
Yeah.
I have my prediction, which is not going to surprise anyone. I have my prediction about like where they're going to take his character in season 5. But yeah, Saru, it's great that Burnham became captain and all that. I mean, without question, but I was rooting for Saru. I really think he is. I'm with you, Al. I think Saru truly is one of the best characters in all of canon.
Yeah, just his arc start to finish has been or start to where he is right now has been so incredible. You can actually see how his values have changed all 4 seasons. Mm-hmm. You can see how his focuses have changed all 4 seasons.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You know, like I think he's such a great character for showing the Star Trek Adventures yes. role-playing game, the advancement of him.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the fact that, you know, he was promoted to captain and he was pretty bad at it. Like, you know, he wasn't the best. You know, I think that's a very cool story. And like, you know, an Obel Fisharan, the one where, you know, he lost his tendrils
his threat ganglia.
Like,
yeah.
That was a great episode.
That episode is one of my favorite episodes of all time.
So does anyone here want to voice their prediction and risk in the future being publicly criticized or laughed at for being
careful
wrong?
Where you're going with this?
No. Anyone want to predict where they think Saru's character is going by the end of season 5?
I'll make a prediction.
Yeah, go for it.
I think he's going to finally get his own command by the end of the season. That's my prediction.
How about you, Al?
I think he is going to live on Vulcan with his wife.
Ah.
Or whatever.
Navarre.
Yeah.
How about you, Brad?
Oh, between the two of them, you know, just or another option. They've been building up that relationship for a while, but they've also thrown curveballs in the past. So I wonder if we're going to see an episode, I don't even know the answer, where it's a choice he has to make between what Jim, you said, and what Al, you said, you know, and are they going to throw a curveball at us? But I could see that as a very interesting arc where they could really... And Doug Jones has done, is it Doug Jones? Yeah, he's done a phenomenal job in that role.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I could see how he could use that as an episode to you know, finalize that arc for him.
Right.
I will not be, I reserve the right to be wrong. I very well, maybe I can live with that. I think he will be offered to become commandant of the new Starfleet Academy.
Oh, that'd be interesting. And then that would help launch the Starfleet Academy series with Tilly as an instructor.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
I'd be all for having him in another series because I really do love the character a lot.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
So many possibilities.
Oh, I and there's so many what ifs, and Jason and I've stuck to Star Trek what ifs. I remember now that we're kind of in that little lull between shows.
Mm.
But we would, you know, where do you think this is gonna happen? I can think back to Picard season 3, especially. Him and I on the phone doing conjecture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, for hours.
Gents, we've been on a long time.
Yeah, it's even later by you guys than by us.
Yeah, you all are. This is I know,
gotta let you go.
Jim, this is like Jim's lunch hour, kind of.
But no, you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say we really appreciate both of you guys being on again. We think the world of you guys, and Al. I mean, we're just so happy for you. Congrats on just a truly special project. It is so good and so cool.
Thank you.
Al, you had a post on Facebook and how to reach you, because you also, because of the other games you're working on, we'll make sure to put in the show notes.
Oh yeah.
Where they can reach out and check out Sentinels and all of that too. So, and we'll put a link in for Jim to do that as a direct eBay search for Alpha Smart Neo.
Alpha Smart Neo, yeah.
Yes.
Seriously, like if you're an aspiring writer out there and you're blocked because you don't feel like you have the time, or whatever, you need a distraction free tool. I mean, go to eBay. You can probably find one for $30-$40, and it uses 3 AA batteries. It'll last you months. You don't have to plug it in and recharge it. You can take it literally anywhere. So check it out.
You can go to Starbucks or whatever coffee, you know, Caribou or whatever is out there, and just sit and read it and turn your phone off. That's the other thing, is, or put your phone on mute.
Yeah. You can write on an airplane. You can write under a tree. You can go to Hobbiton, like I did on my honeymoon, and write in Hobbiton. It's super portable, so you can go anywhere you want with it.
I thought you were going to go Dr. Seuss on us. You can write in a tree, you can write with a bee, you can, you know.
Oh my god. So,
if I'd been thinking about it, I would have, but I wasn't thinking about it.
thank you gentlemen, I appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
We're gonna have you back again, because we know that inevitably other things will come out, and
of course
we have to talk about them.
Yep. So, absolutely. Thanks for having us on the show again, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
Have a great night, everybody.
Man, if it weren't for the fact that they both have lives, we could probably have made that a 3 or 4-parter, because there's so much else to talk about just beyond the tactical campaign that'll come down the road. I know that we don't have any inside privy info, but we know that there are other things that are going to be announced and coming down the line.
Yeah, Jim's always got something coming down, man.
Yeah. So thank you both again for joining us. It is always a pleasure to have you on individually, and then to have you together was just icing on the cake for
it. It was a treat. And I will say, as we settle down with our tea at Audubon Court, as we're recording this, I am listening to the Star Trek Adventures Continuing Conversations podcast episode with Al and team on the tactical campaign guide. And that's that. So if you all aren't listening to their podcast, you should be, Continuing Conversations. But it's an especially interesting episode, because they're getting into the nitty gritty in a way that we didn't. They're getting more into the artwork. They're getting into some of the rationale and whatnot. It's very complimentary. I think I would encourage you all to listen to that one too. It is not going to substantially overlap with what you've heard from us over the past two episodes. They've got more of the creators behind the tactical campaign guide. And it's just really fun to listen to. And of course, we know a bunch of these people now. And so listening to them riff, it's like it for us, it's like we're sitting there with them, just flies on the wall.
Well, just like we would do at Audubon Court, we're sitting around the table.
That's right.
And having tea or coffee and doing that very thing. And just as we've said with anyone who's joined an episode for us for the first time, we always remind them, this is, we don't script questions.
Nope.
It's all just conversational. Wherever it takes us, it takes us.
So speaking of taking us, as we transition out of this interview, anything on your desk or on your mind that we haven't discussed yet?
I'm trying to think. I think as we've talked about before, as this drops, we're continuing our live and play by email campaign that you are GMing for us with Star Trek Adventures. I think, to be honest with you, between that and Traveler and Fantasy Age Second Edition from Green Ronin, there hasn't been a lot of time for anything else. So, and in all honesty, I think right now, this is probably the first time my wife has ever heard a part of a podcast, because she just walked downstairs to drop something off. No one sees you. Don't worry.
It couldn't be avoided. It couldn't be avoided.
Yeah. So I think I win. She heard about 15 to 30 seconds of it.
Yeah.
She couldn't hear you. She could just hear me, but that's, I mean, I can't think of a bigger win than, or maybe it wasn't.
I can, but we'll let that go.
I think between Traveler and STA and Fantasy H2E,
More than enough. I know.
More than enough for this week.
Just swamped. And you know, well, here, I will close out with this. It's nothing on my desk. Man, do I wish it were. But this is not quite news anymore. This was announced about a month ago. But as we're recording, this is one of the first times I think we felt like we could talk about it. We don't have a lot more insight than the general public at all, but I think it's fair to say we are both very eager to see the Star Trek Adventures Core Rulebook second edition. This book looks incredible. We did not want to say anything about it intentionally until we'd had chances to talk about the tactical campaign guide with Al and Jim. Now that we have, you can all assume we'll be, you know, scouring the internet for information, but thinking about this, we've received just a little bit of information on it, nothing untoward. Everything we hear, it just sounds awesome.
And check out, I know that Jim especially, and I know that others are out on the STA Reddit. I know that they're out on Discord. Modifius has put out information. I think they're trying to get it out in relatively short order.
I believe the official release date is the fuzzy early fall.
Yeah.
Or at least fall. One of those two. So you know,
so we, yeah, keep an eye on it. They'll post more, and then obviously when it comes time, we're going to have Jim and anyone else that he thinks back on to talk about it.
As I told Jim, because you all know me, I don't pre-order a lot. I'm cheap. Hard to be in RPG land and cheap at the same time. Alas, we persist. I don't know why you're raising your hand. You're not cheap.
No. I'm saying that I'm not one who.
Yes, fair. Yes. Speaking of which, you need to talk about that. I need something from you. But that said, I told Jim offline, like when that's officially announced, when 2E is officially announced for pre-order, and hence the PDF would become available, I will pre-order that thing the day, if not the moment.
Hands down, we both will, because
we
want to see what's going to change in second edition. And let's be honest, again, we have no inside info. We didn't talk about it really with them, other than the fact that we saw the announcement.
Yep.
But think about all the tweaks and changes, like you had said in the previous episode, iterations that have occurred, and now put that together with what they've learned over what is it now, 7 years? and what they've learned from other games.
Yeah, so cool. I'll leave you with two words as a recommendation for that 2E guide. More Moopsie. You need to watch more Lower Decks, my friend.
Okay.
Need to catch up. It's
a first when you said that, I'm like, did you just say something that requires us to be
to bleep it out?
To mark it as explicit.
More Moopsie. Speaking of more Moopsie, all of you could really help us out by giving us a rating on your favorite podcast app. Those stars are for free. Please spread the wealth, spread the love, and help us roll out Dice in Mind to more listeners. We know for the past 3 years, we've joked about, hey, we're up to 7 listeners. In fact, we're doing a lot better than that, obviously. And
I'm interrupting your wrap up, but I'm gonna say you had mentioned that there was a certain area when you texted me kind of some podcast.
Thank you. This is a little late, but for whatever reason, especially given this happened before our episode with Carl Nablais of Death in Space dropped, we made the charts, the RPG charts for podcasts in Sweden. That's just delightful. So to all of you out there in Sweden who are listening to Dice in Mind, thank you so much. More to come. All right, everybody, you know the deal. Be well, stay well. We'll see you in a couple weeks.